So I'd like to do two more meditations today. The first one is called Settling the Mind in Its Natural State. So we always come back here, and this is always how you can start your meditations. Just a basic practice. So find a posture that's helpful for you. Usually putting both of your feet on the ground is a good way to connect with the earth and to connect your spine and feel the natural curve of your spine and your lungs and your abdomen being open. So there's a free flow of air coming in your body and out your body. And stillness supports attention, and movement tends to fragment it. So once we get settled, it's really good to be as still as you can. And now at your own pace, take a series of three deep breaths, and as you exhale, just relax and release your body, any tension. And whatever sense of ease is in your body and mind, just connect with that. Nothing to do, nowhere to go. Become aware of the tactile sensations in your body. Let your body be as still as a mountain. Your awareness be as still as space. If at any point you become distracted, just relax more deeply by getting more in touch with the tactile sensations in your body. And with that sense of ease in your body and mind, focus your attention on the mental domain. Stay connected with your breathing to keep you in unwavering mindfulness as you attend to whatever arises in your mind. With no preference for fewer thoughts or different emotions or any particular state of mind, simply remain fully present to what is. So in future classes, we'll have time to share a little bit in the course of the class. Today, I'm going to keep going. There are two other areas I just want to mention briefly. And one is concentration. And we'll be coming back to this over and over again. Alan Wallace says, success in observing mental events as they occur is not achieved by trying harder, but counterintuitively by relaxing more deeply while maintaining the luminosity of awareness. So relaxation and ease is really the key, you know, to concentration. And we have a saying in our tradition, in concentration, my heart is at peace. That's really what concentration, and some of you will remember from the spring, there's a Tai Chi master named Deng Min Dao, and he said, my favorite quote, perfect concentration is effortless flowing. It's a good antidote for me, as I tend to be one of those people who thinks concentration means working harder. It's really the opposite. Letting go, relaxing, you know, into what is. So mindfulness of where we are in the moment is our path. How concentrated is my mind? Sometimes I sit down, I mean, I don't think this really has a whole lot to do with how many years you've meditated. You know, sometimes my mind is concentrated and sometimes it's not. This practice of this sutra is not that more concentrated is better. It's to know how concentrated or how unconcentrated my mind is, to be aware of that. And that's the object of my practice. Wherever I am, I'm really agitated and distracted right now. And that is perfect because that's my practice. That's what I'm working with. So, of course, we want to transform and we want to develop our concentration. And we also want to be able to include everything as our practice. So wherever we are, the goal is to be mindful whether we're concentrated or not. You know, I had a story about pleasant and unpleasant when we were working with the feelings. And I have this Pilates instructor, and she had me on this machine where I had one leg going straight up, and my foot was pushing on this bar, and it was like really stretching my hamstrings. And we were studying this. So I was like, "Oh, I'm aware I'm having an unpleasant experience, you know, an unpleasant feeling, you know." And then my other leg, she stretched out far, and she was like pulling and massaging my leg and my foot. It was really wonderful. And I was like, "Oh, I'm aware I'm having a pleasant feeling." It was like unpleasant, pleasant at the same time. It's like, okay, that's what's going on. So the other thing I want to mention is about the word karma, because I think this is just kind of a helpful context. The word karma simply means action. That's what karma means. And one reason that we're investigating our mind is so that we know our motivation and the origination of our thoughts and our feelings. And then we have the freedom to choose how we want to be. And it's said that the accumulation of karma happens at the climax of our perception. So when we perceive that, that's when karma starts to have an effect on us. The Dalai Lama said, actions are not judged by their success or failure, but by the quality of their motivation. I mean, I remember him saying one time, if you do something with a bad intention, you'll always have a bad result. And if you do something with a good intention, you may have a good result, you may have a bad result. But at least you have a chance. So if you know your motivation, you know, I mean, I really can look at this in my speech. you know, is my speech really clear, or is there some motivation, some agenda, some personal need that's somehow getting expressed through what I say or don't say? That's a whole another course we could do. So there's a wonderful monk named Thantasara Bhikkhu, and I wanted to read you these two paragraphs that he talks about karma, because the Buddha was born in India, and he came from this Hindu culture that had, you know, a huge amount of tradition and practice and belief, and that was one reason he was so great at concentration, because they were great at that. but they had their system, the Hindu system of karma, is kind of a resigned powerlessness. You know, if you look at the caste system, it's like, well, your children are all starving, that's your karma. You know, kind of all this kind of excusing. This is kind of the stuckness of your situation is explained by, you know, you must have done something bad in a past life or something. And that's not the Buddhist view of karma. So this is two paragraphs, but I think it's really helpful. He says, Buddhists saw that karma acts in multiple feedback loops, with the present moment being shaped both by the past and by present actions. Present actions shape not only the future, but also the present. Furthermore, present actions need not be determined by past actions. In other words, there is free will, although its range is somewhat dictated by the past. The nature of this freedom is symbolized in an image used by the early Buddhists of flowing water. Sometimes the flow from the past is so strong that little can be done except to stand fast. But there are also times when the flow is gentle enough to be diverted in almost any direction. So instead of promoting resigned powerlessness, the early Buddhist notion of karma focused on the liberating potential of what the mind is doing with every moment. Who you are, what you come from, is not anywhere near as important as the mind's motives for what it's doing right now. Even though the past may account for many of the inequalities we see in life, our measure as human beings is not the hand we've been dealt, for that hand can change at any moment. We take our own measure by how well we play the hand we've got. If you're suffering, you try not to continue the unskillful mental habits that would keep that particular karmic feedback going. If you see that other people are suffering and you're in a position to help, you focus not on their karmic past, but on your karmic opportunity in the present. Someday you may find yourself in the same predicament that they're in now, so here's your opportunity to act in the way you'd like them to act toward you when that day comes. So it's really an empowering concept, karma. Okay. So let's do one more meditation. And this one is the next step. It's called attending to the mind and its contents. So we settle in the same way. We go to the forest. We become aware of our posture. We connect with our breath. Just follow the natural pattern of your breathing. And once again, direct your attention to the field of the mind. You might see it as a pasture, and just notice the contents. Just observing whatever arises with a relaxed curiosity without preconceptions. Notice when a mental event arises in that field. What factors caused it to arise? If you didn't notice what caused it to arise, what's causing it to be sustained? Is that thought or feeling changing or stable? See if you can witness its departure. Did you dismiss it, or did it just disintegrate? If you become caught up in a thought, let it become the object of your meditation. Just relax, release your grasp, and maintain your awareness of it. And when it disappears, just return to your natural state of spaciousness. And to close, I'd like to leave you with a quote by Thich Nhat Hanh. He says, "Breathing mindfully, we know the events playing out in these mental movies are not real. And simply remembering that fact removes their power to push us around. When we cling to thoughts and memories, we are clinging to what cannot be grasped. When we touch these phantoms and let them go, we may discover a space, a break in the chatter, a glimpse of open sky. This is our birthright, the wisdom with which we were born, the vast unfolding display of primordial richness, primordial openness, primordial wisdom itself. When one thought has ended and another has not yet begun, we can rest in that space." So your homework is to work with the exercises 13 and 14. Desire and anger. Be a rich week.